Welcome to ESEC. Last time we were here, we left off with the concept of sharing. Our topic was sharing. And we were trying to answer this question. The goal is to answer the question, how do I care about my life and not become selfish? How do we get those two to go together? In fact, last week's big idea, it'll come up on the screen, was sharing keeps me God-centered instead of self-centered, which is the key to this whole sort of re-engage series. How do I keep myself God-centered? And we said there was a part in the Bible, and don't forget to do good and share what you have with others, because sacrifices like these are very pleasing to God. We're allowed to care about our life. What you want to see happen in your life matters. What you want to see happen in your marriage, your health, your finances, what you want to see happen in your relationships, your job, the amount of money you have, that all matters. You can have dreams about that, and that's important stuff. And the way it doesn't become selfish is I wrap it in sharing. I understand that the different things that I have in my life, I can share with other people. This series, Reengage, is about staying connected with God. And the reason for that is when I'm connected to God, that's when I can feel like and believe that He loves me. In fact, we have some verses we're using as sort of theme verses. And grab your note sheet. I'll read the first one to you. This is how God showed His love for us. God sent His only Son into the world so we might live through Him. This is the kind of love we're talking about. We love God because He loves us. So there's always this sort of, I'm able to forgive because God has forgiven me. Once I receive mercy, I can give mercy. And the same for love. Once I can believe God loves me, I have love to give other people. He goes first. So it's about being filled up and then being able to have it overflow to other people. Now, this other verse that's kind of the bookend, it's in your notes, and it's not something that Jesus said. Actually, it's a statement that somebody else made when Jesus asked them a question. Let's look what they said. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. To which Jesus replied, do this and life will be yours. Jesus said, life is a gift and love is the point. Here's the backdrop. Jesus is talking to a group of people about this size, and he's explaining to them and inviting them to have a relationship with God. Very simple. So it happens every weekend here at Eastlake, by the way. And invite you to have a relationship with Jesus, grow closer to Jesus. And so he's talking to them about God. And so he's talking about having a relationship with God. But this group of people, what they're hearing is, he's asking me to be more religious. When's the last time you were talking to someone and you realized they're not hearing what I'm saying? He's talking about having a relationship with God, and they're hearing, I need to be more religious. And there's this religious, super religious person in the crowd, and he raises his hand, he says, listen, Jesus, just boil it all down for me. Boil it all down for me. What's the most important thing in life? And the crowd goes quiet. And Jesus looks at him and says, well, what do you think it is? And he makes this statement. And Jesus said, boy, do that, and you will live. Now, it'd be nice if the story ended there, but it doesn't. The religious leader is sort of put on the spot. He's not sure how to respond to all that. So listen to what the religious leader does. It's in your notes. But the teacher of the law wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? And I think at that point, the Lord starts to realize, oh, you're starting to move right into the conversation I was hoping to have. It's the big idea this weekend, right in your notes. Love doesn't ask, who is my neighbor? Love does ask, am I being a neighbor? And we'll see in this story that Jesus tells him. He doesn't answer him directly, but he tells him a story. It's in your notes. Let me read it to you. It's in your note sheet. To answer this question, Jesus said, a man was going down the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. Some robbers surrounded him, tore off his clothes, and beat him. Then they left him lying there on the ground, almost dead. It happened that a Jewish priest was going down that road. When he saw the man, he did not stop to help him. He walked away. Next, a Levite came near. He saw the hurt man, but he went around him. He would not stop to help him either. He just walked away. Then a Samaritan man traveling down that road. He came to the place where the hurt man was lying. He saw the man and felt very sorry for him. The Samaritan went to him and poured olive oil and wine on his wounds. Then he covered the man's wounds with cloth. The Samaritan had a donkey. He put the hurt man on his donkey and took him to an inn. There he cared for him. The next day, the Samaritan took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the man who worked at the inn. He said, "Take care of this hurt man. If you spend more money on him, I will pay it back to you when I come again." So now everybody's listening now. He raises his hand and says, "What do I have to do?" And you sort of get the sense, and I understand this, maybe you felt this tension before, you've done this, you sort of get the sense that he's wanting to narrow down who he has to love. He's asking this question to Jesus: who's qualified, who's disqualified? Who can I mark off my list? Who makes the cut and who doesn't make the cut? When is the last time you realized in your family you didn't make the cut with someone? They have some standard or requirement or something. You just realize, I didn't make the cut with them. I didn't make the requirement with them. You know, there's certain conditions. I bought an extended warranty one time for a car that I bought. And after I bought it, I started to see the fine print and all the different things about all the different conditions that could happen if they didn't honor the warranty. You know, basically, you got to leave your car in the garage and never drive it. Because they had so many conditions that if these things happened, they didn't have to honor the warranty. That's kind of what this guy's doing. He's saying, "Jesus, where's my loopholes? What are the requirements? Who don't I have to love?" And Jesus tells him this story. Let's jump right in. There's 3 different ideas on who we disqualify. Or who is it that gets disqualified or not? We'll say it that way. Write the very first one down. It's not my problem. It happened, a Jewish priest was going down the road. When he saw the man, he did not stop to help him. He walked away. I wonder if the guy lying on the ground. So Jesus tells a story, and like any story, as he's telling the story, you're thinking about and adding stuff in. I wonder if the guy lying on the ground sees the priest coming and thinks, "Oh, great, it's a church guy. A church guy is going to stop and help me. They're supposed to be good people. Whew, I am so glad it's a church guy coming." Or does the man lying on the ground see the priest coming and think, "Oh, no, it's a church guy. He's not going to stop for me. He's a God guy, and God's not going to stop for me. I haven't been to church in a long time. I'm not religious enough. I mean, God knows what I've been doing lately. God's not going to stop for me. In fact, God probably let all of this happen because he's mad at me. He wants to pay me back." You ever get in one of those loops in life where you don't mean to, but you're sort of like, when I'm good, God treats me good, and when I'm bad, God treats me bad. You ever get one of those where you see God through your own behavior, and when you do that, he's always angry, he's always upset, there's always something that I've done wrong? Maybe he looks at the priest and says, "He ain't stopping. God's not stopping for me." And Jesus tells this story to set up a real contrast. He sets this story up and he's trying to say, here's who God isn't and here's who God is. And who God isn't is someone that relates to me on the basis of my behavior or performance. He doesn't stop or not stop based on how good I've been lately. But the priest does. And sometimes I do too. Because it's not my problem. I understand the tension here. Maybe you've been in that. You're like, hey, you know someone's like, it's not my problem they lost their job. It's not my problem they got a lousy car. You know, it's not my problem they don't get along with their boss. You know, it's not my problem that mom and dad are mad at them. You know, it's like one of the ways that Jesus said, justifying himself, it's like one of the ways I get out of stopping is I'm like, wait a minute, I have my own problems. I don't need yours too. That's your problem. You caused that. And maybe you've had someone blow right through your life and you just had a sense that they couldn't be bothered. That's the priest. And it's interesting, the way Jesus pictures him is his mind is already made up. He doesn't even slow down. I mean, he sees what's happening. He sees the guy over there. And you ever have that happen in life? You see it. But you don't even slow down. You don't. This guy is a priest, and he doesn't even stop and say a quick, simple prayer to ask God if he should stop. And I understand the problem, because I do that too. I've already made my mind up. Your wife's talking to someone on the phone, and you hear her talking and maybe offering to watch someone's kids for the weekend, and you've already made your mind up. Whoa, wait a minute, I'm not giving up my weekend. I'm going camping. Hope that works for you. Or you know someone in your family, and they're struggling with money again, and your mind's already made up. Whoa, I'm not giving them any money. You don't even think about it. And for those that are following Christ, you don't even stop and say a prayer. I understand that problem. I don't even slow down to ask God. Am I supposed to do anything here? I don't even slow down. I just keep walking. Now the Samaritan, that's the contrasting, very, very different. The Samaritan went over to him and poured olive oil and wine on his wounds. Then he covered the man's wounds with a cloth. So the Samaritan sees him, and he slows down and goes over to him, and he stops. The Samaritan decides that he's going to check it out and if he's going to get involved. And it's amazing that Jesus would choose a Samaritan, by the way. Because Jews and Samaritans, there's a huge amount of racial tension between them. Samaria is like if you lived in Kearns. It's like the place, like, you're from Kearns, you know, or something like that. I mean, I'm just playing. But I mean, Samaria is that area, you know, that everybody kind of like, oh, you don't live, you know, like, you live out there. You're from West Valley. You live in Magna. I'm on the east side, you know. It was an area in Israel that these Jewish people that intermarried with a bunch of other nations. See, these are Jewish people that are listening to the story, and Jesus makes a Samaritan the hero, and they're like, what, are you crazy? I mean, it'd be literally like if you were at a Utah football game and there's like 3 seconds left on the clock and the guy has to kick a field goal and you're looking down there and all of a sudden the guy that runs out onto the field is got a BYU uniform on. You're like, what the heck? And he runs out on the field and he kicks the winning field goal and your team wins the game, but they got this BYU kicker up on their shoulders and they're taking him off the field and you're conflicted. You're like, you're happy for the win, but you're like, I don't want to root for that guy because I'm not a BYU fan. And hopefully you aren't either. But no, we just play. But I mean, you know, it's conflict. That's where they're at in this story. They're conflicted. They're like, a Samaritan? They were known for not being religious. They didn't follow the Jewish customs. They married whoever they wanted to. They were this mixed bag of people. They were trying to figure out how to be with God, but they weren't about to do it the way the church told them to do it. And the Jewish people didn't like them. And Jesus uses them as a hero. And here's why. He always sets the bar so low that everybody can get over it. Doesn't matter what your past is. Doesn't matter what's going on right now. You may be super religious, no religion. Do you know one of the great things I love about the Eastlake Church Network is that you don't have to earn your way to a place to serve or make a difference with God. You don't have to get cleaned up for some period of time. Jesus made a Samaritan the hero. He can make you one too. First day in, you can make a difference with God. First day in, he can leverage your life. First day in, he's more than willing to pick you to do something. He picks a Samaritan. And the Samaritan goes over, and he doesn't do a lot. He just gets started. That's all he does. Here's what sometimes you have to do. You have to be willing to say, your problem is my problem, and now it's our problem. Something happens, you don't go, whoa, wait a minute, that's not my problem. You say, okay, because I care about you, your problem's my problem, and now it's our problem. It's not just mine. It's still yours. Now it's ours. And he puts olive oil and wine on him. Go figure. I ain't buying it. I don't think that was that big deal. I think this is a total dude that just goes there and says, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Pours a bunch of stuff on him and says, I'll just look like I know what I'm doing, you know, and tell me that's how guys would do it. They just pour a bunch of stuff on there, smear it around, I got you, buddy, you know, and The guy's probably thinking, "Whoa, I'm so glad the doctor showed up." You know, come on. This was stuff he was going to eat. He used what he had. He just got going. He just got started. All he did is he said, "Listen, you know what? This is our problem now." Now, here's the thing. Love does not ask, "Who is my neighbor?" Love does ask, "Am I being a neighbor?" Number two, write it in your notes. This is a good one. It's too difficult. Next, a Levite came near. He saw the hurt man. He went around him. He would not stop to help him either. He just walked away. Now, a Levite is an assistant to the priest. So maybe they were traveling together. For all we know, the priest is up front because he's the big, you know, muck-a-muck, and the assistant guy is behind, and he's watching the Levite, the head guy, you know, he's watching the head priest go right on by him, but when he comes up, he's different. He's different. He goes over and he looks at the guy. He'd like to walk by just like his mentor, but he can't. He's conflicted. He walks over to the guy and looks at him. Who taught you how to love other people? Who's your model? Can you imagine this Levite? He goes over to the guy and he looks at him and he's probably thinking, you know, this, whoa. It's like, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to carry him? I'm going to get blood all over me? I mean, this is going to be a huge job. He says, and besides that, he walked away. But something inside of him, he's just, should I or shouldn't I? He's probably like looks at the priest and looks at the guy and looks at the priest and looks at the guy and decides to take the out. He leaves him there. But the picture of this in the story is that he doesn't walk away with his head up high. He walks away and his head is hanging down. He got out of the work, but he's not happy with himself. Lazy leaves a bad aftertaste. Let me give you an unscientific observation. In my life, I've seen it in others. When you cop out, I'm not talking about getting a break or a rest. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when you cop out, you find a way to justify, I'm not going to put the work in. I'm not going to do it. It leaves a bad aftertaste. Unscientific observation that I have noticed. Then when I'm lazy or someone's lazy, they have to deal with that aftertaste somehow. So they eat too much, or they drink too much, or they look at porn, or they game all night, or they spend too much money, or whatever it is, because they got to deal with that aftertaste of being lazy. Because nobody likes that taste. Jesus doesn't give us opportunities in life so he can look down and say, "See, when I say jump, they say how high." He's helping us live a better way. Somebody modeled something different for him. Somebody showed him something different. And at the last second, he sees the priest up front and he says, "I don't have to. I'm out." But the aftertaste was left behind. Now, here's the Samaritan, same setting. The Samaritan had a donkey. He put the hurt man on the donkey and took him to an inn. There he cared for him. He's got a donkey, of all things. So he probably comes riding up on a donkey, slides off the donkey, goes over to him, and now he puts the guy on his donkey. Here's a lesson. I have learned the more I love, the more I want to love. Now he's walking. I don't know what it is about love. It'll stretch me so much further than I ever thought I would go when I start to love someone. When I'm loving, it makes me more loving. I wish I could be filled with love like a rock star. I really do. I wish when I'm not feeling loving towards my wife or somebody at work, like the love's all gone, I just wish I could go to Maverick and get a can of love. And just pump that baby down, and now I love everybody. But love doesn't come in a can. It comes by action, and it grows through a process. And all of a sudden, now he's not just putting some olive oil and wine on the guy. Now he's giving him his donkey. Now he's willing to walk. the rest of the way. It's a process. So, he loves him, cares about him, and it's pushing him further than he wants to go. All it started with is, I'm going to go over and see what's going on here. Whoa, this guy looks like he's in trouble. This guy can't walk. I guess I'm walking. Love does not ask who my neighbor is. Love asks, am I being a neighbor? Would a neighbor drag him behind the donkey? Would a neighbor leave him? Or would a neighbor walk? Number three, put in your notes. It costs too much. Priest, he walked away. Levite just walked away. They get out of the whole thing and it doesn't cost them a dime. Cost benefit. You ever do that one? Cost benefit, baby. I'm not against cost, but I need to see the benefit. See? Cost benefit. That's not a neighbor. They went cost-benefit. Didn't cost them anything. So they think. Now look at the Samaritan. The next day the Samaritan took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the man who worked in the inn and said, take care of this hurt man. If you spend more money on him, I'll pay it back when I come again. I was thinking about this story and I thought, gosh, can you imagine if you just let your imagination go? How different it must have been when these men got home. Can you imagine the difference for the priest and the Levite when they got to their home and family, and the Samaritan when he gets home to his family? I mean, the priest or the Levite get home and they walk in and the wife says, hey, how was the trip? Fine. Anything big happen? No. His kids run in, hey, dad. You're back, you're home, you know. Did you meet anybody? No, didn't meet anybody. Everybody goes back to their life. Can you imagine the Samaritan when he got home? I mean, the minute he opens the door, honey, come here. Get kids, come here, you got to hear this. I'm riding old Don the donkey down the road, man, and I see, there's like this guy, I see him up front. I'm thinking, what the heck? So I take the donkey over, and then I look at him. He looks like somebody beat the crud out of him. And he's got blood all over him. And I just like, whoa, what happened to this guy, you know? And so I stop, and he tells me this story that he got ambushed, and these guys beat him up, and they stole all his money. I didn't know what to do. I'm no doctor. I didn't know what to do. And so I thought, well, I'll just put some food on him, and I threw this vinegar. And, of course, the wife is smiling because she's seen that move 100 times. Oh, yeah, act like you know what you're doing and you don't, you know. And so he said, "I, you know," and then I thought, well, what am I going to do with him? I can't leave him here. So I put him on the donkey, and the kids are like, you put him on the donkey? Yeah, I put him on the donkey. I didn't know what to do with him. I took him, remember that inn we went to, honey, a couple months? Yeah, I took him down there. That guy seemed like a nice guy. I brought him in. Guess what? The thieves had been there. And they were bragging about they'd hurt this guy. And I come in with him. The whole place is in a ruckus. I told the inn guy, I said, listen, we got to do something for him. We get him up on a table and he brings some soup over and we start like getting him somewhere where he's like, okay. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I can't spend the rest of my life here. I got stuff I have to do. So I told the guy, I can't stay. I got to go. Take care of him. Give me your word. Take care of him. If it costs some money, I guess it's on me. Imagine how different it must have been for those families. What if the kids would have said, Dad, what if his son was there and his son said, Dad, do you think he made it? And the Samaritan says, yeah, son, I think he made it. Love does not ask, who's my neighbor? Love asks, am I being a neighbor? You can't buy what the Samaritan got. You can't buy that. You can't buy that story. You can't buy that experience for your family and your church. You can't buy the life he got to live. It didn't cost too much. The benefit probably far outweighed the cost. And look how Jesus ends this whole thing, phrase at the bottom line. Love does something for someone. Now we're back to the story in the Bible. Let me read to you how it finishes. So everybody's listening to the story. Now listen, we're back to the religious guy and the whole group there. Here goes right here. Then Jesus said, which one of these three men do you think was really a neighbor to the man who was hurt by the robbers? The teacher of the law answered, the one who helped him. Jesus said, then go and do the same. This is a conversion. He was able to turn some. This guy shows up and says, listen, who do I get to disqualify? Who can I cross off my list? He approaches it, who is my neighbor? Jesus tells him a story, and then he says, who do you think the neighbor was? And we see a conversion here. A very religious man says, I had it all wrong. I've been probably seeing God all wrong. Been treating people all wrong. I have been way off. He's a neighbor now. Who's in your path? Who are you walking by? Who's in your family? Don't get caught in it's not my problem, or it's too difficult, or it costs too much. Just get started and be a neighbor. Do something for someone. Be a Samaritan. Have a story. Let God empower your life to make maybe a big change, maybe a small change. Do something for someone. See, the topic today is loving other people, re-engaging with God so we can love other people. We started talking about worship and singing, which we'll be doing in a moment. And that's how we engage with God and walls come down. He can reach us. We can love ourselves if we share. But if we're going to love other people, it can't be about who they are. It has to be about who I am. Love is not on the basis of who they are. It's on the basis of who I am, which is exactly how God loves me. God doesn't love me based on who I am. He loves me based on who he is.